Greetings, listeners. This is VK3OTN, the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old-Timers Club of Australia, with this month's news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club for June 2026. I am Andrew, a VK3 Charlie Alpha Hotel. Details on when to hear the news and information bulletins are available at the club's website, www.raotc.org.au. VK3OTN is available on a wide range of radio platforms, HF, VHF and UHF, along with 2-metre repeaters, amateur television, DMR, that is digital mobile radio, and D-Star. These news broadcasts are available for download for up to 6 months, just in case you missed the original news broadcast from the RAOTC website. Just put RAOTC into your favourite search engine. If you'd like to contact the club, then why not send us an email? Our address is raotc@raotc.org.au. I hope you enjoy this month's news broadcast. Welcome to the latest RAOTC news for June 2026. Well, today it's June the 1st and the official start of winter. Let's hope we don't freeze to death here in the southern states this time around. The first half of May here in Melbourne was almost like summer weather. Dress of the day was shorts and t-shirt. Well, at least in the middle of the day. As a bit of a joke, I usually tell visitors that the weather here in Melbourne is like this all the time. Peter Marks, VK3TPM, our administrative officer, has been pretty busy organising bookings for the September Melbourne luncheon, and the dates are now locked in for the Caulfield RSL on the 17th of September 2026. This is the week prior to the AFL Grand Final. If you live a little further outside of Melbourne, for example, Ballarat, Geelong, Bendigo or even Traralgon, it will cost you a massive $2.85 each way on the train to get to the lunch. I think you'll agree that most amateurs can afford this. This is less than the cost of a cup of takeaway coffee, and everyone knows how careful amateurs like to be with their pennies. Now, to alleviate any concerns our regional attendees have, all the regional V-Line trains have toilets on board, one in each carriage, so that's one less thing you have to worry about. I've got no idea why someone would drive several hours to a luncheon when public transport is so cheap, it's almost free. Remember the date, which is the 17th of September, so why not put it in your diary or mark it on your calendar, or whatever system you use, and hopefully you can look forward to a great day out for less than the cup of a cost of coffee to get to and from the luncheon at the Caulfield RSL. And by the way, the cost of the coffee at the luncheon is covered, so you don't even have to pay for that. The objectives of the RAOTC is to maintain the interest and the original pioneer spirit of amateur radio, honour the history and heritage of our hobby, and encourage good fellowship amongst all radio amateurs. Full membership of the RAOTC is available to any person who has held or has been qualified to hold an amateur licence for a minimum of 25 years. Associate membership is also available to any person who has held or has been qualified to hold an amateur licence for a minimum of 10 years. Associate members are entitled to all the privileges of full membership except the right to vote or to hold office. An RAOTC member, on achieving 90 years of age and having been a member for a minimum of 10 years, automatically qualifies for free life membership. Membership subscriptions, which fall due on the 30th of April each year, start at $18 for a one-year membership. So if you're not a member, then why not give it a go for 12 months and see what you think? There is a sample copy of OTN on the club's website for you to download and peruse at your leisure. The address of the club's website is www.raotc.org.au. rwa.org.au. I'll repeat that, www.raotc.org.au. Birthdays. Most of us have enjoyed over the years the nature documentaries produced by Sir David Attenborough, and many will be aware that he reached the magic milestone of turning 100 years old on May the 8th this year. In the same week, there was another very important birthday, that is of Bill Roper, OAM, VK3BR, and previously VK3ARZ. About a week before Sir David celebrated his 100th birthday, Bill celebrated his 90th birthday. This was a small event attended by Mike Good, VK3BDL, our current president, along with former president Ron Cook, VK3AFW, and Ian Williams, VK3MO, together with their wives and, most importantly, two of his daughters. Unfortunately, Bill is no longer physically able to contribute to the day-to-day running of ROTC, having stepped down several years ago. However, he has contributed tremendously to our hobby over the years, and I'll list some of them in his OAM citation. For the Wireless Institute of Australia, Federal Office Manager, 1989 to 1993. Editor and Assistant Editor for Amateur Radio Magazine, the official journal of the WIA, 1972 to 1978. Treasurer, Victorian Division of the WIA, 1962 to 1972, and was awarded Honorary Life Membership in 2005. For the RAOTC, he joined the committee in 2000, and has performed the following roles: Editor of OTN, Membership Officer, President, Broadcast Producer, Website Coordinator, and Secretary. As a former member of the Royal Australian Navy, to another former member, all I can say to you is Bravo Zulu to Bill Roper, OAM, VK3BR. Certificate of Appreciation awarded. In addition to Bill Roper's tireless efforts in many things RAOTC, Jim Gordon has had to step down from the committee after 23 years. Unfortunately, Jim, like Bill, has had to put family priorities first, and many recreational activities have to take a lower priority. At the last committee meeting, it was agreed that a certificate of appreciation be awarded to Jim Gordon, VK3ZKK. Here's Jim's response to receiving the certificate, reproduced by kind permission of Jim. Dear RAOTC committee members, I sincerely thank you for presenting me with a framed certificate of appreciation for my 23 years of service on the RAOTC committee. I am honoured to receive this recognition. The certificate is colourful and attractive. I thank Barbara and Tim for their efforts in producing the certificate, putting it in an attractive frame, and I thank Tim for presenting it to me on a gathering of committee members. It was rewarding to be a member of a dedicated team that worked to maintain the objectives of the club, to foster interest in amateur radio, capture, record and honour the history and heritage of the hobby. The success of the work of the team is demonstrated by the new members that the club continues to attract. I enjoyed my time on the committee, and it is sad that due to family responsibilities, I don't have time to continue as a committee member. I am proud of the progress that our club has made and of the many recent advances. I am confident that this will continue. Thank you for acknowledging my work and for the continued opportunity I was afforded to contribute to the RAOTC. I will follow the club's future initiatives with interest. Best wishes to all committee members. 73, Jim, VK3ZKK. New members and silent keys. I haven't been advised of any new members or silent keys at this time of putting this broadcast together, So I guess one could say that's bad news followed by some good news. In closing, just in case you may have been wondering, hearing some of the articles on the broadcast, I have a good collection of spoken technical articles recorded over the years by both Bill Roper, VK3BR, and Clive Wallace, VK6CSW. However, it's physically beyond them to record anything new. And with that, that's about all the news I have for you this month.
You are listening to VK3OTN. VK3OTN is the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club, Australia, Incorporated, with the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club.
In this month's broadcast, I was hoping to have two technical articles. However, due to time constraints, I've had to leave the story on the former Liddell Power Station in the Hunter Valley, site of the new Liddell grid-scale battery, to another time. This month, Clive Wallace, VK6CSW, will tell us about the War of the Currents. That is, what is better, AC or DC? Please remember, this was recorded in 2014, so the reference to modern electric cars is as it was then. It's interesting to note that technology really has come a long way since, to the point where most current electric cars now have a comparable range to either petrol or diesel-powered cars.
And now, over to Clive VK6CSW with the feature item for this month's news session.
The Struggle for Power and Glory, or The War of the Currents. This article by Mike Smith, specialist technical writer, appeared in the March-April 2014 issue of Electronics Online and was brought to our attention by Ron Cook, VK3AFW. Mike Smith writes, "Two names representing two different technologies stand out like beacons among the thousands of names and inventions that were such a feature of the 19th century. These two, like boxers in a ring waiting for the contest to start, sparred and weaved in bids to make their beliefs the one the world would accept. But the two were not the inventors of the technology that they so passionately believed in, and strangely, they're better remembered today as the inventors of the gramophone and the vacuum braking system used on trains throughout the world. The men were Thomas Edison in the DC corner and George Westinghouse in the AC corner. Right from the development of the first DC generator, the problems of distributing the power by cable was apparent. There were huge voltage drops over just a short cable length, and the voltage that was produced by the generator was the voltage the consumer had to use because there was no way of changing it. And these two factors alone prevented DC from becoming more widely distributed and used. Traditionally, the contest has been said to be between these two men. In fact, there were many other names, including engineers and financiers, now largely forgotten, involved in the war, because war it was, and there were some questionable acts. One name that hasn't been forgotten is Nikola Tesla, who was well and truly in the AC corner. Edison is credited with inventing the gramophone, a cine camera, and a long-lasting light bulb. But he also was one of the first to use mass production methods. He created the first industrial research laboratory at Menlo Park, is said to be the fourth most prolific inventor in history, and many of his inventions established new industries in the 19th century. In his lifetime, he founded 14 companies, including General Electric, which is still one of the biggest public companies worldwide. The Edison Electric Light Company was formed in 1878, and he demonstrated his incandescent light bulb the following year at the laboratory. He is reported as saying at the time, "We will make electricity so cheap that only the rich will burn candles." In 1890, the Oregon Railroad and Navigation Company's new steamship, Columbia, was fitted with Edison's lighting system, where it lasted for 15 years. In Europe, there was also wide interest in power generation. In 1835, Hippolyte Pixie built an alternator using a rotating magnet, but he didn't know how to put his discovery to practical use. 20 years later, Guillaume Duchesne used AC to contract muscles, but again, this was not seen as particularly useful. By 1878, the Gans Company began working with single-phase AC in Budapest. In 1882, Sebastian de Ferranti, working at the Siemens plant in London, took a keen interest in AC. With Lord Kelvin and others, he went on to make an early transformer. By 1891, Ferranti, already a leader in electric lighting, had installed underground cables at 10,000 volts in London, confident that the transformers would look after any voltage demanded by the consumer. Later, Ferranti was hired by the London Electric Supply Corporation to design a power station at Deptford on the south bank of the Thames in London. He designed the whole complex, including the distribution system, and when it was completed in 1891, it was the first power station to supply high-voltage AC. But the main battle between DC and AC was being fought in America, where Westinghouse and Edison, with help from Tesla, were involved in a passionate struggle to have their respective technologies adopted by governments and the public. DC, the first player on the stage, was relatively easy to make. Its drawback came with the difficulty of sending it over any great distance due to huge voltage and therefore current losses. Consumers had to be within about 2.5 kilometers of the generator. The other major drawback was the difficulty in changing the voltage. Consumers had to put up with the generated voltage because there was no way to effectively and economically change it. When Tesla joined Westinghouse, he was convinced that the cyclic nature of AC was the way forward using the polyphase principle. As a result, he developed a series of generators, motors, and transformers. In today's world, the frequency of AC varies between 50 and 60 Hz. Japan is unusual in having a mixture of frequencies, but in those days, even the frequencies were not without challenges. A low frequency makes the design of motors easier and means lower impedance losses, which are proportional to frequency. But the low frequency causes noticeable flickering in arc lamps, and with advancing technologies in transformers, DC was doomed. AC could be provided at any voltage to suit consumers, but more importantly, it could be sent for hundreds of thousands of kilometers down quite small cables with very little loss. Westinghouse imported several transformers from Europe and began experimenting with an AC network in Pittsburgh. By 1886, he and his assistants had built a hydroelectric generator that supplied AC to Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Using the transformers, the transmission line voltage was stepped up to 3,000 and then reduced to 100 volts for electric lighting. The network was so successful that 30 more were built inside a year, along with an induction meter using a rotating magnetic field to measure the current consumed. By 1887, Edison had 121 DC power stations, but when their limitations were discussed, he campaigned that AC was far more dangerous to use, so he arranged for some of Edison's employees to publicly execute unwanted animals using AC. The science behind this says that 60 Hz AC, under adverse conditions, is more likely to induce cardiac fibrillation in humans compared with the same DC voltage. But the public smear campaign went on, and in 1903, Edison workers electrocuted an elephant that had previously killed several people. Edison went further and proposed electrical executions of criminals, and this idea was adopted so that in 1890, William Kemmler became the first man to be put to death in the electric chair. It was a bungled execution because the victim survived 17 seconds of the current flowing until it was increased to a fatal level by the prison authorities. Afterwards, Westinghouse is reported to have said, "It was a brutal affair. They could have done better with an axe." Edison, in a further bid to disgrace and humiliate Westinghouse, then tried to make popular the term Westinghoused for those sentenced to death by electricity, but the word did not appeal to the public. Slowly, AC gained the upper hand. The World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago in 1891 saw Westinghouse win the contract to build an AC network to power the event. He also established the first long-range power network and distributed AC from the Niagara Falls generators to Buffalo in New York, a distance of some 40 kilometers. Generating AC was limited to either hydro or reciprocating steam engines. Westinghouse felt that reciprocating steam engines were clumsy and inefficient. Meanwhile, in England, Charles Parsons was experimenting with steam turbines, so Westinghouse bought the rights to the turbine, and by 1898 he produced a 300 kilowatt unit, followed the next year by a 1.5 megawatt unit for the Hartford Electric Light Company. Westinghouse then went on to develop steam turbines for marine propulsion, but, as was so common with 19th century inventors, litigation was just around the corner. Lewis Latimer brought to Edison an improved technique for making carbon to fit light bulbs. In the meantime, Westinghouse bought Philip Diehl's competing induction lamp patent rights for $25,000 US, which forced the holders of the Edison patent to charge less for those patent rights, effectively lowering the cost of the lamp. In 1883, the US Patent Office ruled that Edison's patent was developed from William Sawyer's invention and was invalid. For 6 years, litigation dragged on until Edison finally won the day. However, in England, Joseph Swan had been granted a patent a year before Edison, so he and Swan formed a joint company called Ediswan to make and market bulbs in Britain. But DC still persisted despite its limitations. The Pearl Street Generating Station in New York was switched on in 1892 and produced 110 volts DC to 59 users in Lower Manhattan. In London, the first station driven by steam provided power to several private houses close to the plant, while a theatre in Brno, Czechoslovakia, became the first public building to be lit using Edison's light bulbs. Today, DC is still used by some sections of industry, and railway systems around the world use DC as they can position substations at convenient points along the track. One of the largest rail networks using DC is the British Third Rail System, which, since the early part of the 20th century, has been providing a train service to southern England. London's Underground is also DC powered. Looking to the future, maybe DC will resurrect itself when electric cars come into their own. Even accepting the current range of around 80 kilometers a charge, there will be a demand for recharging stations with energy that could be provided by solar or wind power on a scale suitable for local distribution, perhaps among the few garages in the high street or special charging bays. Innovative switching and control systems could ensure a continuous power supply. But all this could depend on the great motoring public having the imagination and the willing wallet to inspire this happening.
Thanks very much, Clive.
This RAOTC broadcast originates from VK3OTN and is rebroadcast under a common license, published on the RAOTC website. The RAOTC broadcast is copyright to the Radio Amateur Old Timers Club Australia, Incorporated, and rebroadcast is authorised only under the provisions of that common licence.
OTN on disc. Are you aware that the entire collection of OTN is available on disc, delivered right to your door for the minimal cost of $25? The files are all in a portable document format or PDF, and can be viewed on any tablet or desktop PC. As time moves on, you've probably noticed that over the years you tend to hoard a few things. When something new arrives home, you have to find room to keep it. Well, why not consider adding the entire collection of OTN? The really good news is, it won't take up any space at all, and it won't provide any food for the silverfish if you're plagued by them. There is another advantage that might not be quite so evident. The files are pretty much the same as what goes off to the printer twice a year. As time moves on, many readers realise their eyes aren't as young as they used to be. Viewing articles on a 22-inch screen is a whole lot easier. You can zoom right in and have one whole column on the screen at a time. Like online newspapers, it's not quite the same as a printed copy. But the advantage is you don't have to worry about where you're going to keep the things. Further details of how to order OTN on disk is available from the RAOTC website, www.raotc.org.au. This is Andrew, VK3CAH. Perth Luncheons. The popular and well-attended monthly luncheon for RAOTC members and friends in and around Perth are held on the second Tuesday of each month. The 7 Mile Bar and Bistro is at 501 Wanneroo Road, Balcatta. Their website can easily be found by googling 7 Mile Bar and Bistro. In addition to the main menu, a seniors menu is also available. There is ample parking available in the adjacent car park. The venue is located on Wanneroo Road near the Reed Highway intersection and is readily accessible with car parking available. Since Wanneroo Road is a main thoroughfare for the northern suburbs, public transport via bus is also a viable alternative. The appropriate route and timetable information can be accessed from the TransPerth website. A copy of the URL is located on our website. Alasdair, VK6ATX, is coordinating the lunch, and it would be appreciated if Alasdair could be notified of those planning to attend to ensure that adequate seating is provided. We look forward to seeing many of you at the ROTC luncheon. Alasdair's email address is vk6kif@bigpond.com. I'll repeat that. Victor Kilo 6 Kilo India Foxtrot at bigpond.com.
You are listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations. VK3OTN is the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club Australia Incorporated, with the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club.
It's customary to end each broadcast with a short or humorous story, so here's this month's offering. I hope you enjoy it. It's entitled Birds of a Feather. Paddy was on the television show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And down to the final question. For $1 million, the question was, what bird doesn't build its own nest? A. A dove. B. A parrot. C. A sparrow. Or D. A cuckoo. Paddy was a little stumped over this question and was allowed one clue and asked, can I phone a friend? And the presenter allowed him one phone call and it was hanging in the balance. Would he win $1 million or not? So he phones his friend Mick and poses a question explaining the four choices he has, and Mick says, it's obvious, it's a cuckoo, and Paddy wins $1 million. After the show, he asks Mick, how on earth did you know that? And Mick replies, it's easy. The first three birds build their own nest. However, a cuckoo always lives in a clock. I thought that was obvious. Poor Paddy.
That's all we have for you this month, and we hope you found something of interest. Thanks for being with us, and we hope you will join in the callbacks, where callbacks are taken. The next RAOTC news and information broadcast will take place on the first Monday of next month, on the same frequencies, and at the same times as today, with the exception of January. If you have missed all or part of this broadcast, or you just want to listen to it again, it is available for download from the RAOTC website. Simply go to www.raotc.org.au. Again, the website URL is www.raotc.org.au. Sometimes the relay station is an automated broadcast, for example, a repeater, where no operator is available to take callbacks. Other times the volunteer operator suffers from very heavy local QIM, and callbacks are not always possible. Many operators need a small amount of time to switch from playing a recorded file to using a microphone. Please be mindful of this. This is VK3OTN signing clear from today's news and information session. 73 from the RAOTC broadcast team.